The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to screenwriter, producer, and creative writing instructor Marty Cook, author of Write to TV, Out of Your Head and Onto the Screen. Stick around. You know you've always thought you could write better scripts than the crap you're currently watching hour after hour, day after day. Here's your chance. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of current Hollywood comedy and drama scribes who are not amused that Marty Cook has broken down what they do into easily digestible chunks that anyone can follow in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. How many times have you and your spouse, you and your friends, or just you alone, I'm so sorry about that, by the way, watched a TV show and thought, even I could do better than that? What if you're right? Seriously, what if someone came along and said, here are easy-to-follow steps that could give anyone with a sense of seeing the ability to write for TV? Now, it's not, as they say, rocket science, folks. Now, that's not to say it's easy or that anyone really can do it. But in the second edition of her book, Write to TV, Out of Your Head and Onto the Screen, Marty Cook certainly makes it seem doable. Of course, there are caveats, starting with this one. You can't succeed in her business, writing TV scripts, from where I am, in St. Petersburg, Florida, or wherever the F you are, if it's not Hollywood. Okay, but you can't say you're not intrigued, right? Marty Cook, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Nice to have you here, and congratulations on the second edition of the book. It's always a good sign when they bring you back to update something.
Thank you. That's what I've heard, so I'm pretty excited about it.
But now tell me, why do it again? I mean, after I just said that, this is going to sound kind of stupid, but was the first edition full of mistakes? I'm sure that's not it. Has the world of TV changed that much? What's going on?
The world of TV has changed a tremendous amount since the first edition. And a lot of that has been technology, how we watch television. You know, when I wrote the first edition, we weren't watching on computer screens and iPods and smartphones and all of that. So technology has really changed how people watch TV. We now watch on we watch what we want when we want it. And that has, believe it or not, sent the business upside down and on its ear.
Well, so I'm curious. I mean, we'll get to the actual act of writing for TV in a second, but how does where we watch it affect the way it's written? I mean, if I'm watching on my laptop, or if I'm watching on a smartphone or a tablet or something, why does that affect the way you or someone else might write a script?
Well, I think that it affects the way, especially in drama, perhaps not as much in comedy. The scripts are still going to be written the same, but especially in drama, what has happened is there has become what's known as binge viewing. So people will sit down, instead of waiting week to week, episode to episode. So these drama shows had to be so tightly written with a great big cliffhanger at the end so that when I get to the end of it, I can't wait to just consume the next one and, consume, a series in a weekend. Hmm. That's one thing that's changed.
Because they're watching it so carefully and... So, I mean, they're not watching it and then seeing it again in 7 days. They're sitting down hour after hour, which I believe my daughter did yesterday with Orange is the New Black. So I guess the writer has to be that much more careful not to be sloppy, that all there are no loose ends. Everything's got to fit together because the person is not taking time away. They're just plowing right through it like it's a 6.5-hour movie in the case of like a Netflix film.
Absolutely, yes, that's true. You know, and then there's the whole new thing with, you know, anthologies. Those are becoming hotter and hotter. So it really is changing. TV business is changing a lot.
Does that affect, I mean, the places that you would do current binge viewing would be places like Netflix, and I guess Hulu is getting into it, and Amazon with their Prime service, that type of thing. But network TV has not really fallen prey to that yet, or have they?
I don't think they have, certainly not like with the streaming services that you were talking about. But quite frankly, a lot of people think that network is going to have to make some fairly significant changes in the way they do business if they want to keep up, because, you know, sooner or later they're going to start really lagging behind. So they're going to have to change the way they do business. And I think some of them are starting to go in that direction.
Now, TV writing tends to be, now I'm going to make a general statement here. You feel very free to correct me and slap me on the wrist, teacher. But TV, when you write a script for TV, it seems like there's a heavy emphasis on the dialogue that you're writing. I mean, you can say, you know, exterior police station or interior, you know, Mr. Media's home office, but the heavy emphasis seems to be on the dialogue and the interplay, because a lot of the rest comes from the set designer, the director, the lighting people, that kind of thing. There, so, and if I'm wrong, I apologize. But if that is the case, how does the emphasis on what's written vary from today versus, say, 5 years ago?
I think that it doesn't. In some ways, it doesn't vary a lot. But in some ways, the dialogue is much faster, and it's interesting because we live in such a much more fast-paced society that you take a script like Bob's Burgers, that those scripts run about 64 pages, and that's a lot longer than used to be acceptable in comedy or animation. It would probably be around 40 or 50 pages, but a lot of these shows, and it can be true in drama too, the scripts are a tad longer because they are heavy, heavy dialogue driven, because, you know, dialogue comes from character, and character is what everybody tunes in to watch.
It's interesting you mentioned Bob's Burger, because, of course, Bob's Burgers is on the cover of the book, and it took me a second because I don't watch that show. However, a friend of mine who's actually been on the show, a fellow named Kit Boss, is a writer and I believe a producer on that show. He was King of the Hill and briefly The Simpsons and Creature Comforts. And anyway, that was an interesting choice for the cover. Is that sending a message in and of itself?
Yes. The cover was, you know, it wasn't an accident. We put a whole lot of thought into the cover. And Bob's Burgers, which is on the top half of it, first of all, it's a hit show. Second of all, the picture, if you notice, they're watching their computer, so they're watching TV, we could say, on the computer, which is new, sort of new age, but yet animation represents, you know, older television, even though it wasn't invented with Bob's Burgers animation, obviously, and it's comedy. And then at the bottom half, we've got, of course, the other big hit, House of Cards, which represents drama and the whole new age of television, which is, you know, through Netflix.
Mm-hmm. So Bob's Burgers, it's interesting to me that you describe it as a hit. I've never watched it. I've never had anyone say a word to me about it. But I know, it may just be one of those shows that's passed me by. I know it's doing very well, it's kind of, certain group of people are obviously watching. I just thought it was one of those animation shows that it kind of slipped through for a couple of seasons, and then, you know, they're hoping that it's going to catch on in a big way. But
well, I would I hear what you're saying, and I might have thought the same thing. But I have to tell you, every season there are when people write spec scripts, you know, scripts that they use to get work, uh-huh, sample scripts. They have what I call flavors of the month, which is, you know, every year it's a new hot show that everybody's writing a spec script on. And I must tell you that right now one of the hottest specs is Bob's Burgers. I'm teaching two classes in television writing at Emerson College, and I think I've got to have out of 10 scripts, I've probably got 6 of those are Bob's Burgers, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess it's because I'm not in college anymore.
Exactly. The 20-year-olds just love that show.
Well, I'll have to pay respect to my friend Kit and sit down and watch it. And sorry, Kit, if you see this, I admit I have not seen it yet, but hopefully by the time you see this, I'll have watched an episode or two.
And it's hot, Kit.
Yeah, there you go. There are some, I think, immutable facts that you write about at the start of the book about writing for television. Number one is that I cannot do it from my office here in St. Petersburg. Why is that, and why do you want the entire country to move to Hollywood?
Well, I don't, but it's funny. I say you can't do it from the farm in Iowa. And the reason for that is, think of if you worked at McDonald's, down the street from your house. That's where you would go to flip burgers or do whatever it is you're going to do at McDonald's. Well, if you're going to work in Hollywood, the studios, that's where stuff gets shot. So you can't, you can't do it from Florida. You absolutely have to be there. And the other thing I caution people about is that I think a lot of times people think, well, I can do it and I'll send the script in and I'll get discovered. But honestly, I'm not trying to scare anybody. I think dealing with reality, gives you a leg up. But the truth of the matter is there are a lot of writers trying to break in. And, if a studio or an agent has people right there that they can send out for interviews, they're not going to wait for somebody to come from, to fly in 3 weeks later from Iowa or Florida. You have to be there. The other thing is when you get an agent, which you're going to need to work in television, they're going to be sending you out on all kinds of meetings. And again, those, you have to be there. They'll call you up and say, I got you a meeting at Fox tomorrow. Well, you can't say, JetBlue charges, $1,000 for me to fly in tomorrow, so can we do it 3 weeks from now? That job will be gone. So you really, for television, unfortunately, or fortunately, if you like L.A., you have to be in L.A., because that's where the work is.
Now, you teach screenwriting and other things out of Emerson in the Boston area. How do you explain this to your students? Because obviously, they're in Boston. I mean, my daughter's going to hopefully to film school in Tallahassee. All these film schools are all over the place. Basically, are we sending them the message that yes, you can go to school and learn the craft anywhere, but if you want to practice the craft, you're going to have to hop, skip, and jump out to L.A.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, film school, I think, is a little bit different because your daughter and others like her, they could go shoot independent, if they could get funding and financing, they can go shoot a film, wherever they choose. But with television, could you go to film school and do webisodes and post them on the web? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The same with short films. But the thing is, if you want to work in so-called Hollywood, in the real television world, you just simply have to be there. And if you want to, go do films for major studios and work in the film business, most of that is going to, is located in Los Angeles. Right now, the studios are not out on the farm in Iowa, unfortunately. They are where they are. So I'm very realistic. And what I love about this is Jay Leno in my book has a quote, and I can't even do it justice the way he said it, but it's like something like, don't think you're going to do it from Lebanon, New Hampshire. Right. Get off your ass and get out here. And, if you don't believe me, then listen to Jay.
How does Jay know I'm on my ass right now? I mean, this is crazy.
How did Jay know that I'm from Lebanon, New Hampshire? Rich? That was weird.
Is that true?
That's absolutely true. Of all the small towns in America he could have picked to say, get off your ass, and it was mine.
And did you change your life as a result of that? I mean, hearing that message from on high?
Yeah, I thought, wow, Jay.
I'm not going back there, if that means anything. Well, of course, he's a Boston boy himself, so he knows that part of the landscape, I guess.
Yes, he is a Boston boy, and we love him for that. He's also an Emerson boy. We love him for that, too.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, you've got him twice over then.
Do.
All right. Well, he should be available to come speak to your class sometime soon.
That's right. He was Emerson's commencement speaker this year. He's fabulous.
How about
See, we
that?
Digress.
Yes.
He's fabulous.
Well, that's good. That's good. Always been a funny guy. I don't know. Never really bought him on The Tonight Show. But sorry, Jay. We'll just move on from there. So what other essentials? We've talked about how things have changed in terms of where we watch TV. We've talked about the fact that if you want to write for TV, you have to be out in Hollywood, essentially. What are some of the other essential bits of information that I just need to accept and move on from to make this my goal?
Well, I think that you have to understand a couple of things. You have to the first and most important thing you have to understand is nobody is going to hire you to, and I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news, but again, we got to deal with the reality. Nobody is going to hire you to be a writer in television or in film until you can prove that you can do it. Because, production is unionized. It's so expensive to make these TV shows. So the way you have to do that is you have to sit down and you have to write not one, but two sample scripts that are, darn good. Because, again, agents, there's a lot of competition. And so, how are you going to make the agent who brings home 20 scripts in a weekend to read, how are you going to make that agent remember you Monday morning? And so you really have to, if you're going to write a spec script for an existing show, you have to really study that show. You have to get a copy of this script. You have to write a script as close to an episode as the show itself does. You really have to have work to show. It's like an actor. You need a portfolio. An actor doesn't just walk in and say, here I am, hire me to be a big star. They've got to have, a reel. They've got to have headshots and a resume. So it's the same with writers. And your portfolio, your calling card really is, at least a couple of really good and different scripts. And those scripts have to really, in this day and age, push the envelope.
And you talk in the book about writing for existing shows. It's very rare that it makes sense to write a script for a show that's no longer on the air, that type of thing.
Yes, although I will tell you, and I said this in the book, and I do find this interesting. You want to write a spec script for a show that's on the air, and you want to try to make it for a show that's going to stay on the air. Because once a show goes off the air, nobody wants to read it. And your portfolio, quite frankly, looks dated. Because you want to look like a writer who's always writing something. And if you've got a bunch of spec scripts that for shows that, like Seinfeld and, Full House, you're going to look really dated, like you don't have anything new. So, but Max Muchnick, who created Will and Grace, came to Emerson. He's an Emerson alum also. He came to Emerson last year, and he said that you could write a spec for an old show if you had such an original take on it. And he used a great example. He said, I would love to see somebody write an episode of I Love Lucy, only set it in modern time. And it's like, think of all the trouble Lucy and Ethel could get into if they had cell phones, YouTube, all of this stuff that they could, really just kill with today. And that would be a really interesting spec script that would stand out for an agent or a producer, after reading a whole lot of scripts on Monday morning. But those of you who are listening, don't do that. That's Max's idea, but that's an example. You got to come up with your own idea. It's really about staying within the rules of how television works, but finding ways within those rules to make your script and to make you as a writer stand out and show that you're bold, you're chancy, and you're really, really creative, but you still understand how the business works and what the rules are.
I'm also starting to think it makes sense to go to a small liberal arts college somewhere in the Boston area in Massachusetts.
Yes, Emerson does have a strong reputation in television.
I'm noticing a lot of connected threads here. Leno, Munchnick.
Yes, okay. There are a lot of them in this book, believe it or not.
Well, and it also seems like, to go back to something I said before, the reason it still makes sense to go to a film school or a media production school or media, TV, where you can study screenwriting, creative writing, is it gives you time to work through the script. Take classes where someone will help you and learn how to write a script and, you know, work through things that, you know, you need to learn so that when you're determined to, if you're determined to follow up with an agent, you're ready. You have, you know, you've worked out the problems before. You don't want to get the door slammed on you first time out.
No, and you make a couple of really good points. Number one, you know, getting an education is, I believe, if it's possible for you, is key. Because you've got to have the background in order to be able to write scripts that are smart. And what you said about going to film school is really true, because I have to tell you, I teach, you know, comedy writing, drama writing, pilot writing, a whole bunch of television writing classes, and in a lot of those, they're the workshop format. So I have to tell you, you know, my students read all of the other students' work, and then we sit and we brainstorm, and together we try to figure out, okay, what's wrong with this script? How can we make it better? And you would be surprised how many times it's, you know, students who come up with a bright idea for somebody else's script that I personally might not have thought of. So that, I think, really helps make scripts better. And the other point that you make is that I think is really, really important is that you will have to get an agent, you know, unless your uncle is Steven Spielberg and you've got, you know, the keys to the city, in which case I don't know why you're listening to us. But you will need to have an agent because studios and networks do not take what's known as unsolicited scripts. So you can't just write your Bob's Burgers, send it to Fox, dance on the desk, and think that, you know, it's going to be produced in, you know, a week or two. They won't even open it. But to get that agent, you have to be ready because, you know, agents won't give you a second read. They're not your writing partner, so they're going to read your script and they're going to make a judgment. Is this person a good writer? Is this somebody I can make money off of? Because that's what they're ultimately there to do.
Right.
And if the scripts are not in good shape, they will not read. They will not say, "Oh, fix this, this, and this," and then send it back to me. They will just say, "This is a writer who's not, frankly, that great." Mm-hmm. So you have to be ready. And school or writing workshops, writing groups is a really, really great way to do that.
Right, and so let's talk about comedy for a minute. Now, there's a lot of ways we could go, a lot to cover in the book, so I want to just talk about comedy. We'll let people buy the book for the drama advice. you say there's one basic rule to writing for comedy. Do you want me to say
what
it is?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
you better be pretty funny, I think, is what the
line
is.
Oh, yes. Yes. That's true, and you know, and I have people ask me a lot, which is sort of a funny question, do I have to be funny to write funny? And the answer is, you do. You're going to struggle, and I've seen people that, you know, unfortunately love comedy and they want to be in the comedy business, but they're just not, you know, there's a certain breed. It's a certain mentality. And I think I say in the book, you know if you're funny. You know if you're funny. You know because your friends say, you're funny. And, you know, maybe you were the class clown, the guy that was always getting laughs. Maybe you're the person that can come up with those fast one-liners. But you know in your heart of hearts whether or not you're funny. And to write comedy, you know, I can't teach you how to be funny. It's like you've got it or you don't. If you got it, you can certainly be taught what to do with it. And, you know, because what I thought you might be saying, which is sort of another rule in this day and age, is that to write comedy, you have to be willing to put yourself out there and take chances. And, you know, here and there, that might mean, you know, writing lines that, you know, could be construed as offensive. Doug Herzog, who is head of president of Viacom, another Emerson.
Really?
Yeah.
He's also one of the early guys at MTV, as I recall.
Yes, absolutely. And, I mean, he's got a huge, huge career. And he said in my book that he believes that, you know, that people really have to push the envelope in comedy these days and that, you know, some of the best comedy offends. And I agree with that. And people, I see sometimes, especially with younger people who have been raised in this politically correct, you know, environment, And, you know, I've had people that here and there, not a lot, thankfully, but in class, you know, somebody will write something in a script and somebody will raise their hand and go, oh, that's not politically correct. And it's like, thank God, because if it were, it wouldn't be funny, you know. So it's like, I think that that's a really important thing for comedy writers to keep in mind. And here's the reason why it's important. When people read your spec scripts, agents and especially producers, they want to see how far you can go. What is in that sick, twisted mind? Because they can always, the thought is, they can always pull that sick, twisted mind back, you know, to fit in with the network television. Mm-hmm. But if it's a bland script, they don't always think that they can, you know, pull you the other way. They'll look at it and they'll say, oh, this is safe. It doesn't take chances. It's kind of bland. Eh. But somebody that's wild and outrageous and chance-taking, they go, oh, okay, funny guy, funny gal, want to meet them. We can always tone them down, but we can't tone them up is the thought.
I always thought that TV and film's greatest loss was a guy I went to high school with did not go that route. Naturally, just this guy was always so funny. I'll give his name in case he ever hears this. Vinny Biondo, funniest guy I've ever been around, just always stuff coming out of him. I just don't think he was interested in writing it down or being a writer, just naturally funny. And but you know, I mean, but if you can't apply that in some way, or in the case of TV, you have to be willing to work in a group with people. I'm sure there's people in that situation who sit in a room and they are just funny and other people are writing it down and they're playing off of, but you also make the point, you cannot just read a book and be funny. You either got it or you don't.
Yes, that's absolutely true. You have to have something to start with. You know, we can build off of it again, but you know, you got to have something.
Now, you also you're able to take in the book, and this is one of the things I really like about the book and why I recommend it, is that you take the whole process and you really break it down into understandable chunks of you do this and then you do this and you do this and you do this. Even to the point of you explain the process of literally writing the script, that there is actually a formula. There's so many jokes per page.
Yes. Television is very formulaic, and it's really, really funny. I can, you know, to walk away from comedy for a moment, I can literally be watching a drama show and cleaning my house and know what page we're on in the script. I can. That's how formulaic it is. Or I can tell when a big commercial break is coming because I can just tell by what we're leading up to and what's about to happen. It's very, very formulaic. So that's true. And I can tell you this, getting back to comedy, that when people read comedy scripts, they are looking for jokes, and it has a certain rhythm. It's like, you know, and I'm going to use my hands for a minute. You set up a joke, you pay it off. You set up a joke, you pay it off. And it's got a distinct rhythm. And when I read scripts, and I know this is true for producers and agents as well, if you're not laughing, all of a sudden you become aware, like, hey, I haven't smiled in, you know, the last minute. Mm-hmm. And then you literally go back and say, where was the last joke? And I know there was somebody who wrote for Frasier and Desperate Housewives in my book, Bob Daly. And he said when he first did it wouldn't have been his first spec scripts, but a spec, it took him like 5 months, which is really not an outrageous amount of time to get a good spec that you just polish and polish and make perfect. But he said the way he knew whether it was done or not is he would just randomly flip it open to any page and look to see if he had a lot of jokes on the page. And if he didn't, he knew he wasn't done. So I don't know that there's an exact number. People go, oh, there's an exact number that you have to have of jokes on per page. Only no one ever really says what that number is.
Right.
So I'm not so sure there's an exact number, but I can tell you, you better have several. You know, and again, and they got to be smart jokes too. It's like some of the worst jokes for me are the jokes where there's the setup, and I can say the punchline before the actor or actress. To me, those aren't smart jokes. Mm. Smart jokes are the ones that, you know, I didn't see coming, and you catch me off guard.
I've over the past year, I've gone back and I'm listening to the old Jack Benny radio show, And I started at the beginning, 1932 he started doing it, and he ended in 1958. And I'm constantly saying to my wife, I listen to it usually as I'm going to sleep each night, and it's amazing. If you want to learn rhythm and patter, it's not television. He did eventually do television, and his television show was not as funny as the radio show. The rhythm and the number of jokes that are packed into every 5 minutes, let's say, and they had a commercial at the beginning and they had a commercial at the end. They didn't interrupt that show for a commercial break. So it's constant. The creativity and the genius of comedy writing, if you want to really get a sense of it, set aside a TV show. Spend a couple hours listening to something like the old Jack Benny radio show, which is available on the Internet. Or another one that's incredibly funny is the Abbott and Costello radio show, which I never really appreciated until recently, and I've gone back and I've listened. It is packed with jokes. There's not like, they don't go 3 or 4 minutes without making you crack up. It's all there. And, you know, that's the best television came from radio at that point. So if you really want to, you know, show your craft.
You are absolutely right, and that's a great. Both are great recommendations. Because, interestingly, exactly what you're saying is what a spec script needs to do. It needs to be packed full of jokes, just like those radio shows, and they need to just make the person reading it crack up, and that's going to get you work. But it's easier said than done. It takes a lot of work to get to that place where it's just joke after joke. And everybody's, you know, laughing.
Now, in the book, you also talk about some things to avoid doing. And one of them is avoid moving uprooting your family, moving them all out to L.A. A little too soon.
Yes. I mean, I think it is harder for people with families. You know, it's but you don't want to. I mean, I would not recommend. That's I do have to be clear about that. I don't recommend that everybody just get up and move to Hollywood.
Right.
You know, it has to work with your lifestyle. You know, if you've got kids in school and you know they're you know attached to certain things, and you've got to be also financially responsible for your family. You know, it's not like you're going to go out to Hollywood in all likelihood. I mean, you know, I use the analogy of can you get win the lottery at the exact same time you get struck by lightning? Absolutely. It's possible. Is it possible you'll go out to L.A. and get work right away? Yes, it's possible. But is it probable? No. So if you've especially got financial responsibilities and, you know, kids and you know, a spouse to take care of, you may have to go a little bit slower, quite frankly, to make sure that, you know, you're not out there. Because the other part of the book that I think is equally important is understanding how the business works. And part of that is if you don't have connections, then you have to put yourself in a position to get connections. So, you know, it may, for a kid getting out of college, you know, I've heard that the average wait time to get a script produced is about, and I hate to say this because it scares people, but reality is reality, about 10 years to that first spec script. So, and I think for me it was about 6 years. And in that time, you know, you're working hopefully in the industry, meeting people so you can get to know who the agents are. You can get relationships with executives and get people and producers and get people to read your stuff.
So Marty, ultimately, and by the way, we want to point out that, yes, Marty Cook is not telling you to walk away from your family or uproot your family and go out to Hollywood. There's a lot of steps that got to come before that. So I just want to, I don't want anyone to come after either of us for suggesting
Thanks.
That.
Yes. No. We got to be smart about it. Yes.
Ultimately, is the money a TV writer can make worth the investment of time and effort and dedication of resources?
Here's the thing. Don't go into television for money. The money is a bonus, okay? You're going to make a lot of money on one script. And if that script goes into syndication, you know, I still get residuals off of Full House and Charles in Charge, you know, and this is what, 20 years later? So, you know, and the money is good. And if you get a staff writing job or you're good enough and you end up creating your own show, it's a very lucrative field. But to get to that point, you have got to work so hard. You got to sit down and you got to write every day. Because you're just not there, or you're doing it for the money. Your scripts are not going to be what they need to be. They're not. The passion is going to be lacking. One of the things that a lot of people said to me, network executives and studio executives and producers, they all sort of said the same thing in this book, and they said they're looking for writers whose voices pop, and their voices pop because they've got so much passion for what they're writing. So you really have to be passionate about your work, and, you know, the money is icing on the cake. It's just one of those sort of perks of the business, and yeah, it's really good money, but it's not the reason to do it, because you got to go through a lot of hell to get yourself there. So if you don't enjoy the hell of sitting down every morning and banging at your computer, you know, it's like, I get up in the morning. My best days are when there's my computer, and it's just me and my computer, and I can't wait to get to those pages, and I can't wait to bang that script out. But if I was just doing it for a paycheck, you know, a lot of times you write scripts, and there's no paycheck attached to it. You write scripts, and an agent doesn't want it, or, you can't get it sold. So it's not about the money. It's about really being a writer and about having passion for your work.
All right, so folks, to review, don't live in St. Petersburg, Florida, and it's not about the money. that's the Evelyn Wood version of this interview. And folks, listen, you can find Write to TV Out of Your Head and Onto the Screen by my guest, Marty Cook, anywhere books are sold, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching us on the website, MrMedia.com, somewhere below the video, you'll see the cover of the book with the Bob's Burgers. And, oh, my God, I just went blank. The House of Cards, right, on the cover. And you just click on it right now. You can get the e-book version instantly. And, of course, Amazon will send a drone to your house in 30 minutes or less with the physical copy of the book. And if you're
producing a new show.
Is that right? Oh.
They're in the, yes, in the streaming business as well.
Yes, yes. Marty, is there do you have a website, Facebook, Twitter? How can people reach you if they'd like to?
I have a website called writetotv.com, and it's you'll see a page that's just a holder page. It's about to go live because the book is new, and off of that, you will be able to actually contact me and write me questions directly should you have any questions about the book or about, you know, your own writing.
Very nice. And are you on Facebook or Twitter or any of that kind of stuff?
I don't have a Facebook page yet. I sort of just am kind of, you know, except my personal one. It's sort of the best place to reach me is through www.writetotv.com.
Very good. Very good. Well, Marty Cook, it was a pleasure getting to talk to you and read the book, and thank you so much for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Thank you, Mr. Media. It was great.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk, and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
And what you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot.
Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Resistance is futile. It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights. Just a Minute with Joe Ardinger.
Like most people living in California, I'm deluding myself that I have the flu. But we all know it's really radiation from Fukushima.
or just the flu.
To hear the rest of this minute, to sample Joe's other minutes, and to subscribe to his newest ones, visit RealmNetwork.com. That's RELMNetwork.com. Just a Minute with Joe Ardinger, another great Realm Network production. Wednesday afternoons, right here on the Realm Network.
The preceding presentation was brought to you by the Realm Network.